On the bridge of the Enterprise, Kirk is in the captain's chair. Sitting in front of him at the con is Sulu at the helm and Painter navigating. A blonde, blue-shirted crew member hands Kirk a disc. On the forward view screen is a luminous green planet.
Approaching Omicron Centi 3, sir.
Standard orbit, Mr. Painter.
Yes, sir.
Captain.
Yes, sir.
I've been transmitting a contact signal every 5 minutes as ordered, sir. All I get is dead air. Shall I continue?
Maintain transmission pattern until we've established orbit.
Yes.
Mr. Spark, there were 150 men, women, and children in that colony. What are the chances of survivors?
Absolutely none, Captain. Bertholdt rays is such a recent discovery. We do not yet have full knowledge of their nature. It is known, however, that living animal tissue disintegrates under exposure. Sandoval's group could not have survived after 3 years.
You're saying that those people built a future in a place knowing they might not survive?
I'm saying they knew there was a risk.
And what about us? Can we afford to send people down to the planet's surface?
The breakdown of tissue does not develop immediately. We can risk a limited exposure.
We've established orbit, sir, and I've pinpointed a settlement.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Mr. Spark, equip a landing party of five to accompany me to the planet's surface. Include Dr. McCoy and a biologist. I'll want them in 10 minutes.
The landing party, Kirk, Spock, McCoy, Sulu, Desal, and Kelevitz, beam down to Omicron Ceti 3. They find themselves in an Earth-like environment beside a track leading to a picket fence and beyond it, a ranch. Spock checks his tricorder as they approach some wooden outbuildings. Kirk looks at Spock and the party presses on. They go into the deserted farm across a dusty yard lined along one side with stables, lean on a fence, and gaze at the idyllic spot.
Another dream that failed. There's nothing sadder. It took these people a year to make the trip from Earth. They came all that way and died.
Hardly that, sir.
They turn to see three men in khaki overalls.
Welcome to Omicron Ceti 3.
The Enterprise party approach the group's leader.
I'm Elias Sandoval.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry. Starring William Shatner, also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock. This side of paradise.
Captain's log, stardate 3417.3. We thought our mission to Omicron Ceti 3 would be an unhappy one. We had expected to find no survivors of the agricultural colony there. Apparently, our information was incorrect.
We haven't seen anyone outside our own group for 4 years since we left the Earth. We've been expecting someone for some time. Our subspace radio didn't work properly. I'm afraid we didn't have anyone here who could master its intricacies.
Actually, Mr. Sandoval, we didn't come here because of your silent radio.
It makes little difference, Captain. You're here. We're happy to see you. Come, let me show you our settlement.
On pure speculation, just an educated guess, I'd say that man is alive.
Captain, this planet is being bombarded by Bertholdt rays, as our reports indicated. At this intensity, we'll be safe for a week, if necessary. But
these people shouldn't be alive.
Is it possible that they're not?
You shook hands with him, Jim. His flesh was warm. He's alive. There's no doubt about that.
There's also no question on the fact that Bertholdt rays are incontrovertibly deadly. There's no miracle connected with the doctor. You know that. No cures, no serums, no antidotes. If a man is exposed long enough, he dies.
Gentlemen, we're debating in a vacuum. Let's go get some answers.
They follow Sandoval across the farmyard. Dappled sunlight breaks through the trees, On the far side of a white picket fence surrounding a white clapboard farmhouse, colonists are busy working. A man chops some wood. A woman draws water from a well. The party follow Sandoval into the simply furnished farmhouse.
There are two other settlements, but we have 45 colonists here.
What was the reason for the dispersal?
Well, we felt that three groups would have a better chance for growth. If disease were to strike one group, then the others would be less likely to be affected. You see, Omicron is an ideal agricultural planet. We determined not to suffer the fate of expeditions that went before us.
Elias.
A beautiful, blonde, green-eyed woman in dungarees comes in and is instantly taken with Spock, who returns her dreamy gaze with a frown.
Layla, come meet our guests. This is Layla Colomi, our botanist. It's Captain Kirk, Dr. McCoy, Mr. Spock.
Mr. Spock and I have met before. It's been a long time.
The sunlight catches her hair, making it glow. Looking slightly embarrassed, she lowers her eyes. Kirk glances at Spock.
Mr. Sandoval, we do have a mission here. Examinations, tests.
By all means, make them. I think you'll find our settlement an interesting one. Our philosophy is a simple one, that men should return to a less complicated life. We have few mechanical things here. No vehicles, no weapons. We have harmony here. Complete peace.
We'll try not to interfere with your work.
Make yourselves at home, gentlemen.
Sandoval makes an expansive gesture with his arm, and the Enterprise party file out of the room. Spock holds back and shoots a somber look at Layla, then follows the others. Sulu and Kelevitz cross the farmyard.
What exactly are we looking for anyway, sir?
Whatever doesn't look right. Whatever that is. When it comes to farms, I wouldn't know what looked right or wrong if it were 2 feet from me.
He perches on the ledge of a porch. Kelevitz opens some huge barn doors and peers inside.
Hey. What is it?
No cows. This barn isn't even built for them, just for storage.
Come to think of it, we haven't seen any animals. No horses, no pigs, not even a dog. Nothing.
You've known the Vulcanian?
On Earth, 6 years ago.
Did you love him?
If I did, it was important only to myself.
How did he feel?
Mr. Spock's feelings were never expressed to me. It is said he has none to give.
Would you like him to stay with us now? To be as one of us?
There is no choice, Elias. He will stay.
She gives a benign smile. Elsewhere in the farmhouse, McCoy uses his medical tricorder and a small cylindrical sensor that he passes over the chest of a colonist.
That'll be all. Thank you very much.
The colonist leaves, passing Kirk on his way out.
Anything?
I've examined 9 men so far, varying in ages from 23 to 59. They're all in perfect condition. Textbook responses. Heart, lungs, excellent. Coordination, excellent. Reflexes, excellent. If there are many more of them, I could throw away my shingle.
Kirk here.
Spock here, Captain. There seems to be a total absence of life on the planet, with the exception of the colonists themselves and various types of flora.
Sulu had the same observation. Any explanations?
Not at the moment, sir. I'm conducting various tests with the tricorder, but results are inconclusive.
Very well, continue investigations. Kirk out.
No animals. That's peculiar.
Yes, especially in view of the fact that the records of this expedition indicate that they did have some for breeding and food purposes. Apparently, none of them survived.
I'd like to see the medical records on the expedition.
Yes, I thought you might.
Oh, Captain, I've been looking for you. You haven't seen our fields and crops. I'd like to show you and the doctor what we've accomplished here.
Oh, I'm afraid I'll have to bow out. I have to continue with these medical examinations. However, if I find everyone else's health to be as perfect as yours, I...
He promised to throw away his shingle.
Well, you'll find no weaklings here. Captain?
This is the reason, Captain. This soil will grow anything we plant in it. It's a perfect world. We have a moderate climate. Moderate rains all year round. It gives us all we need. It is perfect.
Pardon me, Captain. Biology report ready, sir.
Well, I have work to attend to myself, Captain.
Go ahead, Lieutenant.
I heard Sandoval saying they could grow anything here. That's true, sir. They've got a variety of crops in. Grains, potatoes, beans.
Make your point.
Well, sir, for an agricultural colony, they actually have very little acreage planted. There's enough to sustain the colony, but very little more.
It's like a jigsaw puzzle, all one color. No key to where the pieces fit in. Why? Kirk here.
This is McCoy, Jim. I think you'd better get back here.
Trouble?
No, but I'd like you to see this for yourself.
On my way.
McCoy turns off his file reader.
Sandoval's medical record 4 years ago when the expedition left Earth. He'd registered scar tissue on his lungs from lobar pneumonia suffered when he was a child. No major operations, but there was an appendectomy. Received all required inoculations, etc.
What's so strange about that?
Nothing. But I examined that man not more than 2 hours ago, and you know what his readings were? Perfect, perfect, and perfect, just like everyone else I've examined here.
Instrument malfunction?
No. I thought of that, and I tested it on myself. It accurately recorded my lack of tonsils and those two broken ribs I had once. It did not record the scar tissue on Sandoval's lungs, but it did record a healthy appendix where one was supposedly removed.
Spock is using his tricorder to take readings from a crop. Layla stands nearby watching him with a smile.
Nothing. Not even insects. Yet your plants grow and you've survived the exposure to Bertholdt rays.
That can be explained.
Please do.
Later.
I've never understood the female capacity to avoid a direct answer to any question.
And I never understood you. Until now. There was always a place in here where no one could come. There was only the face you allow people to see. Only one side you'd allow them to know.
She has her hand on Spock's chest. He looks uncomfortable and moves away.
I would like to know how your people have managed to survive here.
I missed you.
Logically, you should all be dead.
If I tell you how we survive, will you try to understand how we feel about our life here? About each other?
Emotions are alien to me. I'm a scientist.
Someone else might believe that. Your shipmates, your captain, but not me. Come.
Spock eyes her suspiciously as she moves away. She stops and holds out her hand. He walks towards her and stiffly puts his arms behind his back. She lowers her hand and they walk away together. In the farmhouse, Sandoval looks out of the window.
Mr. Sandoval, within the hour, I've received orders from Starfleet Command to evacuate all personnel from this colony. Naturally, you'll inform your people to begin preparations. We will have accommodations for you aboard the Enterprise.
No.
McCoy and Kirk exchange a look.
It's not an arbitrary decision on my part, sir. I have my orders.
Captain, it's entirely unnecessary. We're in no danger here.
We've explained the Bertholdt rays to you and their effect. Can't you understand?
Doctor, how can I make you understand? Your own instruments have shown that we're all in perfect health. We've had no deaths here.
What about your animals?
We're vegetarians.
That doesn't answer my question, sir. Why did all your animals die?
Captain, you stress very unimportant matters. We will not leave.
Sandoval smiles and returns to the window, looking out across the sun-kissed landscape. Layla and Spock are crossing a field. Spock stops, looking impatient.
It's not much further.
You've not yet explained the nature of this thing.
Its basic properties and elements are not important. What is important is it gives life, peace, love.
What you're describing was once known in the vernacular as a happiness pill. You, as a scientist, should know that that's not possible.
Come. I was one of the first to find them. The spores.
Spores?
Spores shoot out of a pod plant near Spock like confetti showering him. He looks nonplussed as Layla watches calmly. He closes his eyes and his face contorts with pain. He holds his hands to his temples, dropping his tricorder, and falls to his knees.
It shouldn't hurt.
No, I can't. Please don't.
Not like this. It didn't hurt us.
I am not like you.
Layla looks worried as Spock doubles up in pain, clutching his stomach. The grimace melts away from Spock's face, and he slowly raises his head with a look of awe and surprise. Layla smiles and kneels next to him, gently caressing his cheek.
Now you belong to all of us, and we to you. There's no need to hide your inner face any longer. We understand.
Gazing into her eyes and slowly taking her hand, he looks as if he's getting his bearings after waking from a long sleep.
I love you. I can love you.
Kneeling beside the pinkish, artichoke-shaped pod plant, he kisses her passionately.
Captain's log, supplemental. We have been ordered by Starfleet Command to evacuate the colony on Omicron 3. However, the colony leader, Elias Sandoval, has refused all cooperation and will not listen to any arguments.
Sandoval.
Captain, your arguments are very valid, but they do not apply to us.
You're being unreasonable.
Well, nevertheless, excuse me.
My orders are to remove all the colonists. And that's exactly what I intend to do, with or without your help.
Without, I should think.
Sandoval strides away.
Would you like to use a butterfly net on him,
no,
Jim?
No, I don't think I'll use a...
Captain, we've checked out everything. It all seems normal, except for the absence of any animals.
We have orders to evacuate all colonists to Starbase 27. I want landing parties to coordinate the colonists and prepare them to transport up to the ship. We'll need extra accommodations aboard. Where's Mr. Spock and Mr. DeSalle?
We haven't seen them since we began our check.
DeSalle said he was going to examine some native plants he found. Did Spock call in at all?
No, he didn't. Spock, see the landing parties, will you, Mr. Sulu?
Yes, sir.
Spock.
Spock and Layla are gazing at clouds.
That one looks like a dragon. You see the tail and the dorsal spines.
I've never seen a dragon.
I have. On Berengaria 7. But I've never stopped to look at clouds before. Or rainbows.
Spock's communicator is lying on the ground.
Do you know, I can tell you exactly why one appears in the sky. But considering its beauty has always been out of the question.
Not here.
Dressed like a colonist in a black roll neck and khaki overalls, Spock turns to Layla and smiles blissfully, ignoring his communicator. He helps her up and kisses her. Outside the farmhouse, Kirk is growing impatient. Layla picks up Spock's communicator and flips it open.
Spock!
Yes, what did you want?
Spock, is that you?
Yes, Captain, what did you want?
Where are you?
I don't believe I want to tell you.
Spock, I don't know what you think you're doing, but this is an order. Report back to me at the settlement in 10 minutes. We're evacuating all colonists to Starbase 27.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so what?
I don't think so, sir.
Spock, report to me immediately.
As they kiss, Spock takes his communicator from Layla and drops it.
Spock. Spock. The frequency is open, but he doesn't answer.
That didn't sound at all like Spock, Jim.
No. I thought you said you might like him if he mellowed a little.
I didn't say that.
You said that.
Not exactly. Well, he might be in trouble.
Yes, take over the landing party detail. Start getting those colonists aboard.
Well, how'll you find Spock?
The frequency is open. It'll act as a homing device. Contact the cell. Have them meet you here. Make sure the landing party works in teams of two. I don't want anybody left alone down here.
Later, Kirk strides through a meadow with Sulu and Kelevitz. Using his communicator as a homing device, he finds Spock's discarded communicator beneath a tree. Sulu hears laughter and points. Nearby, oblivious to his crewmate Spock, is cavorting with Layla. Kirk steps towards him, then stops, taken aback. Spock is hanging upside down from a tree like a monkey with his legs wrapped around a branch.
Spock. Mr. Spock?
The Enterprise crew and colonists pile boxes and bags in the middle of a field. McCoy, overseeing them, looks up in amazement at DeSalle, approaching with two pod plants like the one that exploded in Spock's face.
What are you doing with those things, DeSalle?
Want you to take a good close look at these, Doc.
DeSalle puts them down.
They're very interesting.
Flanked by Sulu and Kelevitz, Kirk strides up to Spock.
Spock.
Spock hangs from the tree, grinning like a cheeky schoolboy.
Are you out of your mind? You were told to report to me at once.
I didn't want to, Jim.
Yes, I can see that.
Layla smiles. Kirk looks dumbfounded as Spock continues grinning at him.
Miss Colomi, you'll have to come back with us to the settlement and prepare to transport up to the ship.
There'll be no evacuation, Jim. But perhaps we should go back and get you straightened out.
Mr. Sulu. Mr. Spock is under arrest and he's in your custody until we get back to the Enterprise.
Spock jumps down from the tree.
Very well. Come with me.
Spock walks away hand in hand with Layla, closely followed by Sulu and Kelevitz. Kirk stops to glance up at the branch that Spock was hanging from, then follows. Spock leads them to a cluster of pod plants. The plants spray a blizzard of spores. Kirk shields his face with his hands.
Mr. Sulu understands, don't you, Mr. Sulu?
Yes. I see now. Of course we can't remove the colony. It'd be wrong.
I don't know what these plants are or how they work on. But you're all going back to the settlement with me, and those colonists are going aboard the ship.
Kirk storms off.
I can see the captain is going to be difficult.
Grinning like lunatics, they follow Kirk. McCoy is standing in the middle of a field near some of the pod plants, his communicator open.
Ready to beam up.
Kirk grabs his arm.
Hiya, Jimmy boy. Hey, I've taken care of everything. Now all y'all got to do is just relax. Doctor's orders.
How many of those did you beam up?
Oh, must be might nigh on to 100 by now.
Hey, Doc, I'm ready to energize. Everything okay with those plants?
This is the captain. Beam me up.
Well, sure, if you want.
I most certainly do. Energize.
The Enterprise is in orbit around Omicron SETI 3. Uhura is at her console on the bridge. Kirk breezes in.
Lieutenant, put me through to Admiral Comac at Starfleet.
Oh, I'm sorry, Captain. I can't do that.
What do you mean you can't do that? Follow standard procedure. That's an order.
Oh, I know it is, Captain. But you see, all communications are out.
Out?
Oh, I short-circuited them. Except for ship to surface, we'll need that for a while.
She goes to the door, then turns back.
It's really for the best, Captain.
She leaves serenely. Kirk looks up from her console and spots one of the plants propped up against the gallery rail. He picks it up and throws it across the deserted bridge, then storms out. He turns a corner into a corridor and is confronted by a long queue of crew members outside the transporter room.
Get back to your stations. Get back to your stations.
I'm sorry, sir. We're all transporting down to join the colony.
I said get back to your station.
No, sir.
This is mutiny, mister.
Yes, sir. It is.
Captain's log, stardate 3417.5. The pod plants have spread spores throughout the ship, carried by the ventilation system. Under their influence, my crew is deserting to join the Omicron colony, and I can't stop them. I don't know why I have not been infected, nor can I get Dr. McCoy to explain the physical, psychological aspects of the infection.
I'm not interested in any physical, psychological aspects, Jim boy. We all perfectly healthy down here.
I've heard that word a lot lately. Perfect. Everything's perfect.
Yeah, that's right. That's just what it is.
I bet you've even grown your tonsils back.
Sure enough. Hey, Jim boy. Y'all ever have a real cold Georgia-style nut julep, huh?
Look, Bones, I need your help. Can you run tests, blood samples, anything at all to give us a lead on what these things are, how to counteract them?
Who wants to counteract paradise, Jim boy?
McCoy out.
Bones. Bones!
Kirk gets up and hurries away from the bridge. In the farmhouse on Omicron Seti 3, Sandoval is pouring tea.
Almost the entire ship's complement has been down.
I'm very pleased. The entire landing operation is proceeding quite well.
Where's McCoy?
He went off to create something called a mint julep. That's a drink, Jim.
Captain, why don't you join us?
In your own private paradise.
The spores have made it that.
Where did they originate?
It's impossible to say. They drifted through space until they finally landed here. You see, they actually thrive on Bertholdt rays. The plants act as a repository for thousands of microscopic spores until they find a human body to inhabit.
In return, they give you complete health and peace of mind.
That's paradise.
We have no need or want, Captain.
It's a true Eden, Jim. There's belonging and love.
No wants, no needs. We weren't meant for that, none of us. Man stagnates if he has no ambition, no desire to be more than he is.
We have what we need.
Except a challenge.
You don't understand, Jim. But you'll come around, sooner or later. Join us. Please.
I'm going back to the ship.
Kirk strides out with military bearing. Spock, sitting at the kitchen table, raises his eyebrows. Kirk comes on to the deserted bridge of the Enterprise. He stands in front of the doors, feet apart, hands clasped behind his back, like Captain Bligh on the deck of the Bounty. Around the gallery, rows of screens and consoles lie unattended. Kirk looks grim. He steps down into the well and presses the intercom switch on the arm of his command chair.
Engineering. Scotty? Biochemistry lab. Security. Is there anyone on board? This is the captain.
He stands forlornly beside the chair. Then slowly slumps into it, his face troubled. He reaches for another button on the arm of the chair.
Captain's log, stardate 3417.7. Except for myself, all crew personnel have transported to the surface of the planet. Mutinied. Lieutenant Uhura has effectively sabotaged the communication station. I can only contact the surface of the planet. The ship can be maintained in orbit for several months, but even with automatic controls, I cannot pilot her alone. In effect, I am marooned here.
Kirk gets slowly out of the captain's chair and sits down at the helmsman's position, a few feet in front.
I'm beginning to realize just how big this ship really is. How quiet. I don't know how to get my crew back. How to counteract the effect of the spores. I don't know what I can offer against
paradise.
Kirk puts his hand over his mouth, lost in thought. A few feet away is the pod plant he threw across the bridge. The plant showers him with spores. He slowly moves his hand away from his mouth, his face lit with a heavenly glow. He smiles and blinks rapidly, as if he's just woken from a dream, looks at the console, and flicks a switch.
Enterprise to Mr. Spock.
Yes, Jim, what is it now?
I've joined you. I understand now.
Wonderful, Jim. When will you beam down?
There's some things in my quarters I want to pack.
Good. Layla and I'll meet you at the beam down point.
Kirk out.
Lying next to Layla in the field, Spock snaps his communicator shut and smiles at her. In his dimly lit quarters, Kirk packs some spare uniforms into an old-fashioned suitcase. Stepping out of the shadows, carrying the suitcase with a contented smile, he stops, and the merest flicker of a frown crosses his brow. He presses some buttons on a grey cabinet and a panel slides open. He takes out a leather-bound folder embossed with the Starfleet insignia and a box containing a silver medal on a red, white and blue ribbon. He sits and stares at the medal, then with a look of annoyance, snaps the box shut. A short time later, in the transporter room, he sets his suitcase down on one of the transportation pads and walks somberly to the control console opposite.
No. No! I can't leave!
His face contorts as if he's wrenching himself out of a bad dream.
Emotions. Violent emotions needs anger.
His face bathed in a cold light from the control panel. He smiles to himself as he ponders. Looking at the transporter platform opposite, he flicks a switch.
Captain's log supplemental. I think I've discovered the answer. But to carry out my plan entails considerable risk. Mr. Spock is much stronger than the ordinary human being. Aroused, his great physical strength could kill. It's a risk I'll have to take.
Enterprise to Mr. Spock.
Spock here.
It's Jim.
What's keeping you, Jim? We've been waiting.
I've been packing some things, and I realize there's some equipment here that we should have down at the settlement.
You know we can't come back on board once the last of us has left.
Do you want me to beam up a party?
No. I think you and I can handle it. Why don't you beam up now?
Just a moment. It won't take long. Do you mind?
I'll wait.
Spock pecks her on the lips, then moves a few paces away.
Ready to beam up, Jim?
Kirk is holding a metal tube.
Energizing. All right, you mutinous, disloyal, computerized half-breed. We'll see about you deserting my ship.
The term half-breed is somewhat applicable, but computerized is inaccurate. A machine can be computerized, not a man.
What makes you think you're a man? You're an overgrown jackrabbit, an elf with a hyperactive thyroid.
Jim, I don't understand.
Of course you don't understand. You don't have the brains to understand. All you have is printed circuits.
Spock looks at Kirk, bemused.
Captain, if you'll excuse me.
What can you expect from a simpering, devil-eared freak? My father was a computer and his mother an encyclopedia.
My mother was a teacher. My father, an ambassador.
Your father was a computer, like his son. An ambassador from a planet of traitors. The Vulcan never lived who had an ounce of integrity.
Captain, please don't.
You're a traitor from a race of traitors. Disloyal to the core. Rotten like the rest of your subhuman race. And you've got the gall to make love to that girl.
That's enough.
Does she know what she's getting, Spock? A carcass full of memory banks who should be squatting on a mushroom? Instead of passing himself off as a man, you belong in a circus, Spock. Not a starship. Right next to the dog-faced boy.
Spock bends the metal tube with a karate chop and knocks Kirk against a wall. Spock lands a punch on Kirk, bouncing him off a wall, then picks up a shelf unit to finish him off. Spock stands over Kirk, brandishing the shelf unit.
Had enough? I didn't realize what it took to get under that thick hide of yours. Anyhow, I don't know what you're so mad about. It isn't every first officer who gets to belt his captain several times.
Kirk feels his jaw ruefully.
You did that to me deliberately.
Believe me, Mr. Spock, it was painful in more ways than one.
The spores, they're gone. I don't belong anymore.
You said they were benevolent and peaceful. Violent emotions. Overwhelm them. Destroy them. I had to make you angry enough to shake off their influence. That's the answer, Mr. Spock.
That may be correct, Captain. But trying to initiate a brawl with over 500 crewmen and colonists is hardly logical.
I had something else in mind. Can you put together a subsonic transmitter, something we can hook into the communication station and broadcast over the communicator?
Can be done.
Good. Let's get to work.
Captain. Striking a fellow officer is a court-martial offense.
Well, if we're both in the brig, who's going to build the subsonic transmitter?
That is quite logical, Captain.
Kirk grins at Spock and leads the way out of the transporter room. On Omicron SETI 3, Layla's looking up at the sky as McCoy ambles up to her.
Well, now, it's a little early to be counting stars, Miss Layla.
I'm waiting for Mr. Spock and the captain to transport down. They had some equipment to be moved. But it's been so long. I wish you'd come back.
Well, now, I think I can fix that for you. Enterprise?
Spock is on the bridge working on some circuitry inside one of the subsystem consoles.
Enterprise, Spock here.
McCoy smiles at Layla and hands her his communicator. She looks skywards as she speaks.
This is Layla. I borrowed the doctor's communicator. I was worried something might have happened to you. You are all right, aren't you?
Yes. Yes, I'm quite well.
Can I come aboard? I've never seen a starship before. And I want to talk to you.
Are you still at the beam down point? And is the doctor there?
Yes, to both questions.
Give your communicator back to Dr. McCoy. You won't need it to beam up. It'll take a few moments. Just wait there. Out.
Mr. Spock. Miss Colomi is strictly your concern, but should you talk to her while she's still under the influence of the spore?
I'll be back shortly, Captain.
A short time later, Spock is at the controls of the transporter room. He steps out from behind the console like a zombie. Layla scurries off the transporter pad and throws her arms around him. Spock's expression is cold and emotionless.
You're no longer with us, are you? I felt something was wrong.
It was necessary.
Come back to the planet with me. You can belong again. Oh, come back with me, please.
I can't.
She gives him an imploring look, her eyes full of tears. She turns away.
I love you. I said that 6 years ago, and I can't seem to stop repeating myself. On Earth, you couldn't give anything of yourself. You couldn't even put your arms around me. We couldn't have anything together there. We couldn't have anything together anyplace else. But we're happy here. I can't lose you now, Mr. Spock. I can't.
I have a responsibility to this ship, to that man on the bridge. I am what I am, Layla. And if there are self-made purgatories, then we all have to live in them. Mine can be no worse than someone else's.
I have lost you, haven't I? Not only you. I've lost all of it. The spores. I've lost them too.
The captain discovered that strong emotions and needs destroy the spore influence.
And this is for my good? Do you mind if I say I still love you?
She looks deep into his eyes, then hurls herself at him, throwing her arms around him and holding him tight.
You never told me if you had another name, Mr. Spock.
She pulls away, gazing up at him. He returns her gaze with a flicker of warmth and gently caresses her cheek.
You couldn't pronounce it.
He smiles. As the Enterprise orbits Omicron SETI 3, Spock and Kirk are working on some circuitry on the bridge.
They'll not hear this, of course. It'll be more of a sensation of feeling it.
So somebody had put itching powder on their skin.
Precisely. Now it should begin to work on their nerves in a few minutes.
They replace the access panel. On Omicron SETI 3, DeSalle and Sulu are tending crops. Sulu accidentally knocks DeSalle with a spade.
Sorry, DeSalle.
What do you think you're doing?
I said I was sorry.
More like you're clumsy.
If you hadn't gotten in my way.
They fight as the transmitter goes into overdrive. In the farmyard, Kelowitz and a fellow crew member roll on the dusty ground fighting. Another crew member comes bounding up.
Come on, break it up! Break it up!
All three start brawling as the subsonic transmitter throws out its silent signals. McCoy is sitting under a tree with a mint julep in his hand, chewing on a blade of grass. Sandoval comes up to him.
Well, Doctor, I've been thinking about what sort of work I could assign you to.
What do you mean? What sort of work? I'm a doctor.
Not anymore, of course. We don't need you, not as a doctor.
Oh, no?
McCoy stands menacingly and squares up to Sandoval.
Would you like to see just how fast I can put you in a hospital?
I am the leader of this colony. I'll assign you to whatever work I think is suitable.
Just a minute. You better make me a mechanic. Then I can treat little tin gods like you.
Keeping hold of his drink, McCoy ducks a punch from Sandoval and floors the colony leader with a jab to the stomach. McCoy's eyes flicker with a sense of confusion. He looks at the drink in his hand and drops it.
Sorry, Sandoval. I don't know what made me do that.
Crouched on the ground, Sandoval holds his jaw, looking lost and bemused.
We've done nothing here. No accomplishment, no progress. 3 years wasted. We wanted to make this planet a garden.
You can't stay here. You can't survive without the spores. After you've cleared at the starbase, you could be relocated. It depends upon what you want.
I think we'd like to get some work done. The work we started out to do.
Enterprise, Spock here.
This is McCoy. Sandoval would like to talk to the captain.
Just a moment. They're all beginning to call in, Captain. Rather contritely, I should say. Sandoval wishes to speak to you.
Put him on the speaker. Kirk here.
Oh, Captain, as I understood it, you were to transport us to Starbase 27. We'll give you every cooperation.
Start making preparations, Mr. Sandoval. We'll begin transporting your people aboard as soon as more of our crew checks in.
Kirk smiles. Later, as the Enterprise prepares to leave orbit, McCoy steps out of the lift onto a fully manned bridge. Kirk is in the captain's chair, with Spock beside him, scribbling notes on an electronic report pad.
Well, Jim, I've just examined the last of the colonists, and they're all in absolutely perfect, perfect health. A fringe benefit left over by the spores.
Good.
On the forward view screen, the planet dwindles as they pull away.
Well, that's the second time man's been thrown out of paradise.
No, Bones. This time we walked out on our own. Maybe we weren't meant for paradise. Maybe we were meant to fight our way through, struggle, claw our way up, scratch for every inch of the way. Maybe we can't stroll to the music of the lute. We must march to the sound of drums.
Poetry, Captain. Non-regulation.
We haven't heard much from you about Omicron Ceti 3, Mr. Spock.
I have little to say about it, Captain. Except that for the first time in my life, I was happy.
The Enterprise continues its journey. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.